Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
When it comes to music, your body has a mind of its own. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and today on the show, how music causes chills and goosebumps. Plus, a live performance from singer and songwriter Jessie Balin and her band. But we begin with a spine-tingling topic. Many of us get chills and thrills from listening to music. Some people have them every day. Others might never experience a guitar-inspired goosebump. Scientists are beginning to study why we have such different reactions to the same music. One of those is psychologist Paul Sylvia, and he joins us from the studios of WFDD in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Paul, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Great. Thanks a lot, John. Pleasure to be here.
So when we get chills, a rush down the spine, goosebumps, what is actually happening there?
Well, it's a very big response to the body and a very big response to the brain. In terms of the body, because we know that some listeners probably don't experience these very much, but really, it really starts on the back of the neck. So people have this experience of their hair standing on end on the back of the neck. Then there's this wave up through the scalp. So it feels like the hair on people's heads is starting to stand up. And as you get this wave of hair standing on end up the scalp, it starts to go down people's back, and people often visibly sort of shiver. Mm. And you get this wave of goosebumps then that goes down people's arms, goes down their thighs, and often down people's genitals.
Now, scientists have called them thrills. They use the French word frisson, and even skin orgasms. I mean, is this happening in the same place in our brain where sex happens?
Oh, it absolutely is. You might say it's happening in the same place where sex happens, where a really good hug happens, where that first hit of caffeine in the morning happens. It's absolutely the same place where chocolate and cocaine happen.
Mm-hmm.
What happens, there's a lot of research that scans people's brains while they're listening to music that they just find very powerful. And what you see when people start to get these chills in the scanner, the brain is really showing signs of euphoria. So these ancient reward circuits are just lighting up. They're just on fire. And the brain is saying something really, really delicious is happening right now.
Now, it's the time of the year where, at least here in New York and I'm sure all over the country, choirs are going to be trotting out Handel's Messiah.
Now,
for people who get, all shivery when they hear that Hallelujah chorus, could it just be too much, just kind of sensory overload?
It's not really that so much. In part... because this is something that people really enjoy. When you ask people to talk about the kind of music that brings out chills, they're almost never talking about it in an unpleasant way. Like, if anything, this is something that people are craving and seeking out and trying to bring about and paying money for. So it seems to be really a very powerful and delightful experience. It's not just being overstimulated, but certainly really big music tends to bring it about.
Well, they don't come much bigger than Handel's Messiah, and especially the Hallelujah chorus. Mormon Tabernacle Choir and a cast of hundreds doing Handel's Hallelujah Chorus from the Messiah, which people will be singing a lot in the next month. And we're speaking with Paul Sylvia, Associate Professor of Psychology at UNC Greensboro and co-author of a study called Shivers and Timbers, Personality and the Experience of Chills from Music. And Paul, that is such a great title.
Why, thank you.
Shivers and timbers. When I was writing the Soundcheck blog post for today, I was trying to come up with it, and I knew there was something in Shiver Me Timbers, but I just couldn't come up with it. You got it right there. Shivers and timbers. What was the research? What did you study? And perhaps equally interesting, why?
Well, what we were really interested in is why it is that some people get chills from music so often, and some people seem to never get it.
Yeah.
So most people have had this experience. Like most people, this is fairly familiar, and they can point to songs that are very powerful. But what's kind of cool to psychologists is some people, this happens every day. This might even happen every time they really sit down and listen to music they really care about. Whereas you'll find about, we find about maybe 8 to 10% of people say that never, ever, a single time in their lives have they had goosebumps in response to music. Hmm. So this is very intriguing. This was sort of the main interest of our research.
And so how did you, I mean, what was to tell us about the study itself, how you set about measuring this.
Well, we've done a range of studies, and our big interest is in a personality trait known as openness to experience, which is one of the really big traits in psychology. You see it in all societies across all cultures.
Mm-hmm.
And people who are high in openness to experience, they love music. Music is just very powerful, very profound thing for them. They spend a lot of time listening to music. They listen to music very deeply. It's something they really cherish. They often talk about craving it. And so we thought that this was likely the big difference between people who never get chills and people who always get chills.
This is the second time that you've used the word craving. I mean, it's almost like you're using the language of addiction. And, you know, when you were mentioning before, it's the same part of the brain where, you know, cocaine or chocolate, you know, might be activating us. I mean, those are physical things, and you can understand the mechanism of addiction. Can music be addictive?
It certainly seems that way if you look at the way people talk about music. So people who are really high in openness to experience or really curious and imaginative, they spend a lot of time listening to music and a lot of money on music, and they often in every sort of moment they can, they're sort of on their little MP3 players with their headphones.
Mm-hmm.
And so in a way, you see a lot of the behaviors of addiction where music is just compelling and gripping. Fortunately, it's a cheap and healthy addiction, so it's really okay.
All right, so I'm sorry. I interrupted you while you were sort of explaining how the mechanism of your study went.
Well, what we've done in several studies is it's very easy to measure personality, and openness to experience has been extensively studied. There's a lot of good self-report questionnaires you can give people to measure it. People are very honest on these kinds of things. So some people will end up being very high. So they're curious, they're open-minded, they're imaginative, they're sort of very flexible. Others end up very low. So they're kind of practical, down-to-earth, sort of concrete, not so into art and music, not so into ethnic food. And in terms of measuring chills, you could do it a lot of ways. So sometimes you can just ask people, hey, how often does this happen? In other studies, you can give them little beepers or sort of iPhone apps where you hit them randomly throughout the day and you say, what are you doing? Are you listening to music? And if you are listening to music, are you having chills or goosebumps right now?
Mm-hmm. And when you get all of that data together, do you begin to see, I mean, is there something across genre, is there a way in which music, you know, certain types of music will have that kind of impact on people more than others?
Yes, certainly. So one thing you see, one feature of music that tends to give people goosebumps is when music feels huge.
Mm.
So some songs just feel massive, they're vast. People describe them as sort of oceanic or spacious.
Mm-hmm.
Handel's Messiah is a good example of this. The music is just so large that it tends to give people goosebumps.
Okay. And U2, an arena rock band also known for, you know, giving people that kind of grand scale, that big sound. When this song, Where the Streets Have No Name, begins, you get this kind of illusion that the music is actually growing and coming closer to you.
Thank you.
Where the Streets Have No Name. That's one of the songs that Paul Sylvia mentioned in his talking about his study, Shivers and Timbers, Personality and the Experience of Chills from Music. And Paul, as you were saying, you know, the sense of vastness, this is a kind of a huge production in this song by U2. Is that it's not a genre thing, right? If that was an orchestral piece, if it was a jazz work, it's that sense of vastness that's key.
That's right. It's in all kinds of genres. There are things that musicians can do, composers do, to give their work a sense of space, a sense of size, a sense of scope. It's easier to pull off in rock music and in orchestral works where you often have very large ensembles. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of things you could do, even just simply. A lot of the tricks of the trade, like reverb and delay and chorus and echo effects, can give this auditory illusion that the listener is listening to this work in this big, big space.
Right. Listeners, what do you think? Do you get chills from music? And what music is it that gives you the goosebumps? Is it a consistent thing, or is it just every once in a while? Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC. That's 433-9692. Or are you a musician yourself? And if so, you know, do you try to actually, you know, to actively seek out a way to induce shivers and goosebumps in your listeners? You can call us, 212-433-WNYC, or leave a comment online at wnyc.org/soundcheck, where there are a number of interesting comments already, and we'll get to some of those in a bit. But Paul, you also mentioned the Icelandic singer Jónsi, who is best known as the singer for the band Sigur Rós. In his solo stuff, it's generally a very scaled-down ensemble, and yet there's a huge kind of dynamic range. You know, deep bass notes and then his high falsetto. Does that give you that kind of sense of grandeur, of vastness that you were talking about?
Absolutely. In fact, quite a lot of research shows that one feature of music that will trigger chills in a lot of people is when the music has what you might call a very big acoustic envelope, when it's just very large in its frequency range. So this would be music, for example, where you have these very soaring high notes, such as mm-hmm. falsetto singing, but also these huge, huge bass sounds. So music like this, especially when it shifts from something small and quiet to this massive expansion where it's big and loud, a lot of sort of areas of the frequency range, that definitely does it.
This is Jónsi and a song called Hengilás. The Icelandic singer Jónsi, Hengilás is the name of the song, and so you have, you know, lots going on in terms of dynamics, very high singing, very low bass notes. Does that give you the chills, the shivers? Well, it seems to vary, as you might expect, from person to person. And for that reason, we have opened up the phones and the webpage for comments. And Joel Meyer in the control room with some of those comments. Joel?
John, our listener Catherine from Brooklyn gets the chills from listening to the song My Country by Curtis Mayfield. Catherine writes, "The minor chord switch on the line, I paid 300 years or more, is the thing that does it for her." And Ryan from Queens, John, is engaging in a bit of an opera smackdown. Ryan writes, "I get the chills even now just thinking about Bryn Terfel's performance of Te Deum on PBS last night. Can't say the same about Andrea Bocelli, though." And finally, Steve from Rockville Center, New York, writes, "The Beach Boys, wouldn't it be nice every time?"
Well, we'll hear a little bit from the Beach Boys, and then we will continue our conversation about musically-induced chills and shivers and goosebumps. And we'll take your calls and more of your comments.
And wouldn't it be nice to live together in the kind of world where we belong?
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Continuing now our conversation with psychologist Paul Sylvia on chills and shivers from music. Our listener Kevin, writing in on Facebook, says he gets chills from hearing new music, hearing it for the first time. But our listener EB in Finland says just the opposite. He wrote, "The very first note of Mozart's Requiem does that for me every time." Now, Paul, you seemed a little surprised when I read E.B. from Finland's note that that the Mozart Requiem opening does it for him every time. Can this kind of goosebump effect wear off as you become more familiar with the piece?
Actually, I was a bit more surprised at the first. That often, it's a little surprising, but what you find in research is usually it's familiar songs that people know and love that tend to bring this about. And if anything, people can really predict this. They have maybe a small stable of five or six songs that just always do it, and those songs just seem to have a power they never really lose.
All right, let me read you a comment from Andrea on Facebook. She writes, "Always, especially live music." And Matt from Brooklyn writes, "Every so often I'll hear a guitar hook or a swelling string arrangement in a song that leaves me a little tingly, but seeing some of my favorite bands in person has been a little more reliable for this phenomenon." Were you able to study the difference between live music and the recorded experience?
We have it in our work, but definitely that's much more reliable in inducing chills, in part because the vastness in recorded music that maybe you listen to through earbuds, that's you might just call half vast compared to the real vastness of a huge stage where the music is amplified and where it does, in fact, actually surround you. The speakers are all
right.
The power of a concert is just something you can't duplicate at home.
All right, let's see what some of our Soundcheck listeners on the line have to add to the conversation. Millie is with us here in Manhattan. Hi, Millie. Welcome to Soundcheck.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
For me, either a big orchestral piece or actually just now listening to the Beach Boys, Wouldn't It Be Nice, that actually, for me, is a feeling, and it makes me want to smile. But when I hear somebody like a Barbara Streisand, she actually gives me the chills. And that is a different thing than being just a feeling from listening to the Beach Boys and making me happy.
So when you say Barbara Streisand, do you mean any Barbara Streisand song?
No, not any Barbara Streisand song. And maybe it's the pitch, or maybe it's the note, or maybe, I'm not sure what it is, but it's the majority of her songs. She just does it for me. And there might even be a young Sinatra from the late 30s can do it to me. And maybe it's the way they hit a note a certain way. I'm not sure. But that does it to me physically.
Now, which raises a question. There aren't many, say, teenagers now for whom the young Sinatra would do what the young Sinatra did for teenagers in the late 30s, Paul. So how much of this is a generational thing? You know, it's the music that you grew up with, you know.
It's definitely very idiosyncratic. So in research, you can simply ask people, what music really does it for you? What do you really love? And what you find is it's very personal, that it's music that has special meaning for people. Like, for example, Barbara Streisand, in this case, is very reliable. But of course, different kinds of music has special meaning for very different people. Some people just can't stand other people's very special music.
Right,
so
right.
That's part of the mystery of this. It's just so different across people.
All right, let's bring Sally into the conversation. She's calling in from Long Island, from Patchogue. Hi, Sally.
Yes, hi. This is Professor Chirac from St. Joseph's College.
Hi.
Hi, we have our class listening, our opera class, live to your program.
Wow.
Hello.
Watching, and we have it up on the smart board.
Uh-huh.
And we were just listening to Puccini, Manon Lescaut.
Right.
Third act, the final scene when she's dying.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a duet between tenor and soprano. And I said, oh, I have such goosebumps. And then I remembered that you had this show this afternoon, and we could turn it on, and there it was.
Wonderful.
And the what got me with Puccini is the unisons of the strings and the whole orchestra in unison with the vocal work, and then the crescendos, and then the pulling back, and then the crescendos, and the emotionality of and unity of the orchestra.
And voice. It sounds, Sally, like you're referring to something Paul was talking about before, that sense of vastness. There's a, you know, the strings are supporting the voice. After all, she is dying and needs the support. But that sense that there's something grand happening.
Yes, yes. And Puccini seems to do it just particularly well in a very accessible way. And we were just wondering why. With Puccini, it's so special.
Paul?
That's a good question. In some ways, I would almost hate to say it, in some ways he might not be special in this technical aspect of the music, that if anything tends to really get people, it's crescendos, like when the music just swells and becomes huge. And Puccini certainly pulls it off spectacularly, but you could consider bands like The Cure or bands like Mogwai or Sigur Rós, like, this is, in some sense, their big hook, too.
Right.
The small to large wave.
Right. Or the end of Tristan und Isolde, the Wagner opera, which is one huge, long... I mean, scientists use the term skin orgasm to, you know, talk about these chills and goosebumps. Well, you know, you don't need the skin... That's just pretty orgasmic
Indeed.
Music. We're speaking with Paul Sylvia, Associate Professor of Psychology at UNC Greensboro, and co-author of the study called Shivers and Timbers, Personality and the Experience of Chills from Music. Lots of listeners have had that experience. And let's go back to the control room. Joel Meyer with more of your comments.
John, we were just talking a moment ago about special moments and meaning associated in people's lives. Emily from Brooklyn has something that she's writing about on our site, about a time that she heard the call to prayer outside a mosque as a 20-year-old exchange student in Cairo. She writes, "It stopped me in my tracks. That's the closest I've ever come to understanding what might motivate religious impulse." Now, John, Andy from North Carolina writes, "I most commonly get goosebumps when I'm moved by a great performance of the national anthem," something that we haven't brought up yet. And John from Inwood has a really great comment. And John, I think I have precisely the moment of music that this guy is talking about. John writes, "I haven't thought about it in years, but my first experience with this was as a teenager when I first heard the John Bonham drum riff between the two parts of Led Zeppelin's Stairway to Heaven. At 15, it was transcendent." So let's hear that.
I remember that. I had a similar experience as a 12-year-old kid. Now, Paul, the series of comments that Joel just read to us raise some interesting questions. You know, there's Emily listening to the Islamic call to prayer in Cairo and wondering, you know, whether this comes, this kind of these chills, these goosebumps, whether it comes from the same place as religious experience. Then there's the commenter who referred to our national anthem. I mean, patriotism, you know, it seems these are all very emotional, very personal things. Are they all kind of bound up somehow together?
Oh, yes, absolutely. In fact, a theme you find when you talk to people about this is that when people have a very strong chills reaction, they describe it as very powerful, that they feel very elevated. And they often use the word transcendent, that this is something really special, not just in that day, but in their lives. And quite a lot of people like that have almost like flashbulb memories of, "I remember where I was when I heard this."
Right.
So these are, what makes chill so cool is it's not just liking music, or it's not even just loving music. It's something very profound and often transformational about music. It's really a very special experience of music that people can have.
And can it happen with music that you didn't particularly like because it's being brilliantly used in the scene on the movie that you're watching or something like that?
Probably. A few people have told me that they would, many men in particular, they really, really hate to admit it, but yes, they do love Adele, "Someone Like You Too," and it does give them the goosebumps and makes them feel like crying. That it certainly can happen. I think particularly when people are very open to experience and very receptive to what's happening, people absolutely can get chills, certainly.
All right, let's bring Nick on the line from New Jersey. Nick, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
All right, how are you doing?
I'm doing excellent. My comment was that, you know, with certain bands like maybe like Coldplay or Arcade Fire, sometimes it seems like it's almost like a manipulation. Like it's a cheap thrill, like with a movie where they make like a big loud sound real fast to scare you.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like it's an artificial thrill, and I don't enjoy it because I know that it's not real. It's false. It's like they're using certain tricks, like where you can musically, where you can like make one sustaining note and then like play different, you know, change the key under that sustaining note. And it's an easy thing that people, you know, that musicians know that they could do, and it's almost like a cheap thrill.
Well, Nick, what you're talking about has been called in some circles, and you're going to love this, the money note. You know, the idea that you can, you know, that you can hold that note and change the key underneath it, and listeners will go, oh, what just happened? And in fact, John Seabrook, writing in The New Yorker in 2003, he came on Soundcheck to discuss this in an article that he called The Money Note. And one of the classic examples that he pointed out to us was this song from Whitney Houston.
Have you dreamed of, and I wish you
The Money Note in the Whitney Houston song, I Will Always Love You. And, you know, there are, I'm sure, for every Nick who feels manipulated by that sort of thing, there are many other listeners for whom it works, and they do, in fact, get the chills and the shivers that we're talking about on Soundcheck today. And, Paul, have you ever met anyone who said, yes, I get the shivers, can you make them stop? I get them too much.
Actually, no one has ever said that, but if that's true for you, absolutely post something to the website. I'd love to hear about it. It seems, I suspect not, because it seems a little bit like caffeine. It's a cheap and it's a legal high.
Mm-hmm.
People absolutely love it. But you never know. When you study people as a psychologist, you sort of learn to never say never.
Well, Paul Sylvia is an associate professor of psychology at the University of North Carolina, Greensboro, and co-author of the study Shivers and Timbers, Personality and the Experience of Chills from Music. Paul, it's great stuff. Thanks for sharing it with us.
Great. Thanks for having me, John.
This is Soundcheck.